Welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Wednesday, January 5th, 2022. Happy New Year to all our listeners out there. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am also on Telegram, and you can follow my channel at t.me/TheRealistReport. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to The Barnes Review, the bi-monthly revisionist history magazine. Please do subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all the details. All right, well, today I've got a very special guest. Terry Smart is joining me from England. Terry maintains the excellent website thehardtruth.co.uk, and Terry and I discuss a variety of topics, including the 7/7 false flag attack on the London Underground, 9/11 and Jewish supremacy in America, and the COVID pandemic, which Terry argues is a global psyop designed to implement vaccine passports and global digital IDs. Hope you guys enjoy. Okay, Terry Smart, welcome to the program, sir. You have a very interesting website that I recently discovered through your Twitter account. Your Twitter handle is at TerrenceSmart1, and I'll have that linked when I post this podcast. And your website is thehardtruth.co.uk. And it's a great website, a lot of really, really interesting topics that I like I mentioned, I just kind of recently discovered. And it sounds like it was a website that you kind of have only recently put online. So I invited you on the program. I figured we'd, you know, have a good conversation. A lot of the topics that you cover, I've covered over the years. So to get started, can you kind of give us a little bit background, like tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in the alternative media?
Yes. Well, first, John, thanks for inviting me on your show. You know, I'm really grateful, you know, overwhelmed, really, that you chose me to come on. How I started, I've always not believed the official story, kind of, about most things, you know. Because if you do a bit of research, you find out that what you're telling you isn't quite the truth, you know? I mean, you've only got to look at JFK, you know? The murder of JFK. They say Oswald did it, you know? But there's so much evidence saying otherwise, you know? And I think that was the first thing I looked at, and I read several books on it. And it's what started me off, really, reading about JFK.
And that okay, was, interesting. How long ago was this?
Oh, I started in my late 20s, you know. I used to read a lot of books. I think I first started reading books on things like the paranormal and stuff like that. That's what I first started. And then I moved on to JFK. And then from there, it just snowballed.
Yeah, you know, isn't it interesting how one topic quickly leads to, you know, so many other topics? That seems to be the case for everybody that sort of gets involved in the alternative independent media and starts researching quote-unquote conspiracy theories. You know, you start with one topic, and it opens the doors to so many other topics. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I like that word, conspiracy theory, you know. I think the CIA made that up after JFK was killed.
They definitely played a role in it. And if you think about it, I've written about this over the years, like the way the media and the government use the term conspiracy theory, it basically like just applies to anybody that is thinking critically and independently about any official establishment narrative. So, I mean, like, if you're just, like, researching, like, the basic facts about whatever the government or media is saying about any, you know, big event, you are yourself a conspiracy, quote-unquote, conspiracy theorist. That's what they would, you know, call you. So it's basically anybody using their own brain to think about information and to think about paradigms and narratives that are put out by the global power structure that is so clearly lying to us about, I've come to discover, virtually every single major topic in existence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd go all the way back to the Bible and what's in there, you know, is, you know, what's in the New Testament, who actually wrote it, you know? Did Moses exist? You know, he gave us the Ten Commandments and he led the Jews to safety, and did he? Or was that all made up? You know? I mean, the Pharaoh, and I found out, it was an interesting book, I found that there's no evidence in any of the Pharaoh's writings of a person called Moses. You know?
And he, interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So, who knows? Who knows for sure?
Right, yeah, exactly. Who does know? There's all sorts of different ideas and perspectives about all sorts of topics. And, you know, like ancient history and the Bible is fascinating, and that is probably one of the most, you know, controversial aspects when you get into sort of the alternative independent media. And it's a huge topic, one that I'm very much interested in. But I wanted to ask you, when did you set up the hardtruth.co.uk? When did you establish this website? Because I, from what I understand, based on our previous conversation, you've been sort of involved in creating websites for a number of years now. And this is a more recent one. Yeah.
I created my first website in 2016. When I found out, that's really when I found out a lot of information about 9/11, believe it or not. I was a late comer. I never really totally believed in what they're telling us about 9/11, but I never did a lot of research until about 2014. Yeah? I think it was Christopher Berlin.
Right. I've interviewed him at least once, maybe twice. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yes.
But I've heard him. Yeah, I've heard him speak a few times in person, and I've read all his books. Yeah, he's a great source on 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, probably the best, I would say. I didn't read his book, but I listened to his videos where I got information. You know, there's lots of videos, and then of course on his website. So about 2016, I set my own website up. And it covered basically everything. It covered 9/11, World War II, the Holocaust, the Bolshevik Revolution, cancer, UFOs, you know, everything was on there. But the provider wasn't great, and the tools to put content on the website wasn't great. So that's when I decided to move. And COVID, when that came along, I thought, right, I've got to set a better website up here, because there's so many lies around COVID, you know, and so much information I could put on. And that's when I started. I think I started it in May of last year, and it was finished by June.
Okay, very good. So this newer website, the hardtruth.co.uk, this is incorporating a lot of the information that you had on your previous website relating to 9/11 and you know, World War II revisionism, and then also adding a lot of information relating to this COVID quote unquote pandemic. I don't even think it's, you know, a genuine pandemic by any means. I think it's more of a global psyop, and that's a topic that I definitely want to talk to you about.
Well,
it's good. Yeah, I'd encourage people to, you know, to check out the website. I've been looking at it the past few days, and it's great. I mean, I've been covering a lot of these same topics for a long time, so it's good. There's a lot of good information about 9/11, about World War II revisionism. I see you have the cancer fraud. That's interesting. I've been really ever since this, you know, this fake pandemic has sort of rolled out, I've been studying much more about, you know, the medical monopoly and the history of medicine and public health and topics like this. And I find it fascinating. It's like a whole other, you know, rabbit hole to go down. And it's something that I've sort of researched and interviewed people about in the past. But I think with this COVID-19 scam, it really kind of brings these topics more to the forefront. So it's interesting. Yeah. What are your conclusions about the cancer fraud? What have the main things that you've come to understand?
I think you covered it a bit with Dr. Lorraine Day recently, didn't you? I heard you mention a bit about it there. But I looked at who owns Big Pharma, you know? Who owns all these big, you know, like Pfizer and all these that make the cancer drugs, the chemotherapy. Who owns them? And when I looked, it was the central banks had all the shares in all these big pharma companies, you know, especially in America. And of course, people like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. So I found out that it was the central banks that had all the major shares in these companies. And the central bankers are not the best people in the world. You know,
that's to put it lightly, yeah.
They've created all the wars. Definitely. When you get people like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers behind it, you know, you just can't trust them. I'm sorry, you cannot.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. You have a lot of information about 9/11. One topic I don't see on here, actually I do see it now, the London 7/7 event. I wanted to ask you about that since you're actually over in England. That's a topic that is very interesting. I think it's pretty safe to say at this point, another sort of like false flag designed to perpetuate this false paradigm of a global war on terrorism. That was, you know, sort of institutionalized in the West following 9/11. I think that was a big part of it. And of course, this is right out of the Jewish Zionist playbook, essentially. I mean, they were writing about how they needed a catalytic event to kickstart a global war on terrorism. And that's exactly what 9/11 accomplished.
Yeah.
And if you look 7/7. And if you look at all the key people involved in 9/11, the cover up, the people that actually own the towers, the people that were investigating it at the federal level, I mean, every single one of them was basically Jewish and had direct ties to Israel. Definitely. So it's all the same, you know, group of criminals behind all of these events, and I think that's basically the case with this London 7/7 event as well. But I'm certainly no expert on the topic. What are some of the conclusions you've come to?
Well, of course, with the 7/7, there was a drill beforehand. But curiously, 1 year before 7/7, so that happened in July 2005, 1 year before on the BBC, there was a panorama episode, and it was called London Under Attack. And they discussed what would happen if suicide bombers attacked central London. One year before.
The precise scenario that we're told
May
unfolded.
2004. If you go onto my website and click on 7/7, the video's on there. Right? It's called BBC Panorama London Under Attack. Yeah? And there was Michael Portillo, he was the defense secretary. And there was another guy called Peter Power. He was on it. Now, Peter Power, he ran a training scenario at the exact time the London 7/7 event was happening. He was running a training event. And do you know where his training event was? At the same three stations, subways, as where the bombs actually went off. Is that
very interesting? Yes. Well, you know, it's
same three.
These like major, like sort of game-changing, traumatizing events, they all seem to follow a very similar playbook in that they're sort of scripted or pre-planned. And global elite, they sort of like give clues and sort of tell you what they're planning and what's going to play out. And, you know, we see this with 7/7. We see this with 9/11. We see this with all sorts of events, even with COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been countless simulations run by, you know, like the U.S. federal government, by these big, like, globalist organizations like the World Health Organization, Johns Hopkins University. I mean, Event 201, everybody at this point kind of knows about Event 201. You know, so, I mean, they sort of simulate these events, and then all of a sudden, you know, a year later or 6 months later, it just so happens to be. Yeah.
Well, it's just a coincidence, right?
Right, yeah. Well, that's what you'd be led to believe, yeah.
So, the 7/7, and one mistake that the UK government made was, in the media, they insisted for a year that the three alleged terrorists got on the 7:40 train from Luton. Then it was found out by a researcher that the 7:40 train was actually cancelled. So they couldn't have got that train. Yeah?
Right,
So they got a later train. I think the 8 o'clock, which means they would get the King's Cross too late to get on to bomb them. Yeah?
Right, yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, when you critically investigate any of these official narratives, 7/7, 9/11, the Boston bombing, any of these like major media promoted, traumatizing, fear-based psyops. I think that's basically what all these events are in a nutshell. You know, you start investigating the official narrative. I mean, it falls apart so quickly. Anybody that's really being honest and sort of doing a basic investigation quickly sees how the official narrative just does not stand up to any sort of scrutiny.
No, definitely doesn't. I mean, them, as far as I know, them three bombers did not get on them trains, and they got shot in a place called Canary Wharf, which is a place where all the mainstream media, the newspapers, have a lot of offices in this place called Canary Wharf in London. And there was lots of media saying people were shot on that morning. I'll just look at one, at the New Zealand Herald. It says, one man said he heard the police marksman had shot a potential suicide bomber at Canary Wharf. Now, this was on the same day, and there's about 10 or 12 references of news agencies around the world saying two or three men were shot in Canary Wharf on the morning of 7/7. And what we believe now is those three boys arrived late at King's Cross. They were taking part in that Peter Power training exercise that he said was taking place. Peter Power said, again, the video of him saying this is on my website, so you can't say it hasn't happened. So Peter Power says there was 1,000 people taking part in this scenario, training scenario, on three tube stations where the bombs went off. 1,000 people from the emergency services were taking part. And we believe these three alleged suicide bombers, Muslims again, were taking part in this training exercise. But they got to King's Cross too late, and then obviously they found out bombs went off, so they ran as fast as they can to Canary Wharf. Don't know why, because they're not from London, so they couldn't like go towards their home. They live quite far from London, these lads. And then the police caught up with them, and they got shot there.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, these people are so sinister in how they pull these operations off. I think a lot of, at least from my research, the events that I've looked into, like 9/11 and a lot of these other, you know, sort of media promoted quote unquote terrorist attacks and mass shootings, a lot of it seems to be faked in the media, to where like the media is literally, you know, engaged in just a totally fake event where they'll just present it in the media as if it were real. And it's very powerful. You know, I have that. There's this whole concept of like crisis actors that became popular following like the Sandy Hook event and the Boston bombing, for example. And I think there's a lot to that. I think that the media does play a key role in deceiving the public and a lot of these big game-changing events. And I question exactly, you know, what exactly, you know, goes on. Like, how are they able to do this? It seems to me from the research that I've done, a lot of it is just faked in the media. Do you have any comment on that, or what's your take on the role that the media plays?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The media, well, at the very top, the media is owned by the same people, isn't it? It's the same organizations that own it all. I mean, if you look at COVID, there's two companies that own nearly everything. That's BlackRock and Vanguard. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Oh yeah.
They have all the shares in all big pharma. I mean, BlackRock owns all the shares in Pfizer, most of them, and Vanguard owns all the shares in BlackRock. You know, I think between them, they own 20 trillion worth of assets around the world. 20 trillion, you know?
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, BlackRock was sort of the chosen entity to handle a lot of the money that's been dished out since this whole COVID scam has come about. So yeah. they're very much tied into all of this. And you see how a lot of these big organizations have direct ties to these like global government type organizations, like the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. You know, they're all tied in together.
They're all definitely all tied in together. But if we go back to 7/7, one important thing was the CCTV, in the three tube stations. Now, you and I know there's a lot of CCTV in airports and railway stations. But what they couldn't show us was any CCTV footage of these three alleged Muslims at the subway stations. There's no video coverage. Now, also the bus, there was a bus that got blew up, on 7/7. And that had, buses have CCTV as well. But what we do know is who was in charge of the CCTV at these three subways and on the bus. Well, it was a Israeli company called Verint Systems.
Ah, was in so charge. There's the Israeli connection, as always, to all these false flag events,
They were in charge of the CCTV. Verint, that's V-E-R-I-N-T, Verint Systems. And again, they couldn't show us any footage, probably because there was none.
Right.
You know?
Wow, that is, you know, that's fascinating. And, you know, it's interesting hearing, you know, your perspective. You know, you're from England. You were there when this happened, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And it really was kind of like the British version of 9/11 for us in America. And 9/11 was my big, you know, that was the event that I really started researching to get me down all these other rabbit holes, so to speak.
Yeah.
And one thing that I was lucky in this regard, I moved to California and I came across a 9/11 truth group in San Diego. And it happened to be one of the most well-organized and like dedicated 9/11 truth groups in the country. And, you know, they were always having monthly events and they'd even have like weekly discussions and stuff like that. It was a very dedicated group of people that were really interested and getting to the bottom of 9/11 and also other events as well. It wasn't strictly focused on 9/11, but of course that was like what the main organizational purpose of the group was. And I'm wondering, are there any like dedicated 7/7 groups in the United Kingdom? Like, is it a thing that people are interested in? Are there dissidents out there organizing meetups and trying to spread information about the truth of what really happened?
I'm not sure about that, but there is one very good website called Terror on the Tube.
Okay, yes, I remember that website. Is that affiliated with Nick Kollerstrom?
Yes, that's his website.
Okay, Nick Kollerstrom. Yep.
So he was one of the very first people to investigate this. And so was richplanet.net. a guy called Richard Hall, English guy. His website is very good, and that it covers a lot of 7/7 and 9/11 information. Well, it covers everything really. It's an excellent website. But yeah, Nick Colostrom had one of the main. I think he also wrote a book about it as well.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Just going on about 7/7. Did you remember the murder of Jean Charles de Menez, a young Brazilian?
No.
7/7.
No, actually, no. That doesn't ring a bell.
Right. So on the morning of 9/11, so he was a Brazilian man working, we believe, in the London Underground as an electrician. Right. And he knew some information. We're not sure what. But he got gunned down on the day of 9/11 on another tube station.
On the day of 9/11 or 7/7? 7/7, okay.
On the day of 7/7 in London, he got gunned down by the police.
Okay, so maybe he knew something.
Yes.
He wasn't now, supposed to know or saw something that he wasn't supposed to see.
Yes. Now, there's the CCTV footage of him at the station, and he has no guns or bombs. He's got jeans on. He's got a jean, looks like a grey jacket or just a pair of jeans and training shoes, and he's walking on the guy's train. And the witness statement says he was just sat on the train, and the police come barging in, pointing guns at him and telling him to get down. Yeah, said he's a terrorist.
Wow.
And he had nothing on him. And they shot him in the head, point blank range, 7 times in the head. Now, why would you need to shoot someone 7 times in the head? I don't know. So what we think happened, his family said he was an electrician working on the subway. Right, so we think bombs were planted under them trains, yeah, by the intelligence service, either Mossad, MI5, and he knew summit, and he was trying to get away, and they were following him, and he was trying to get onto the train. They tracked him down somehow, and they shot him.
Wow.
Now, if he was a suspect, you'd arrest him and question him. He had no guns or nothing. And he got shot point blank range, 7 times in the head, according to witnesses.
Wow. That's...
Now, the official story is he was a threat to the police. He had no weapon, though. So he knew summit, and he was killed for it.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's what we think he knew. Some say he knew something about the bus, the CCT, because the CCTV was took down from the bus that exploded, so there'd be no CCTV footage. And either he saw something on the bus, what they were doing to it, or he saw someone on the underground planting the bombs. Because if you look from there's a couple of photos of the inside of one of the trains that blew up, and the metal is bent upwards. Now, if a bomb is underneath a train, the metal would bend upwards, yeah? You would think. So if a suicide bomb is stood and a bomb goes off, the metal wouldn't come upwards towards a suicide bomber, would it?
Right.
But it was bent upwards, which could only come from something exploding underneath the train. And witnesses have said there was 3 holes in one of the carriages. Now, one suicide bomber can't make 3 holes in a carriage. He might make 1, but not 3. So there was definitely bombs that went off, but they weren't from suicide bombers. That's for sure.
Right.
They were planted there.
Yeah, so it's pretty clear that virtually no aspect of the official 7-7 narrative adds up. Is that fair to say? Just like with 9-11, yeah.
Yeah. And do you want to know why they did it?
Tell me.
The question? Because that was the Iraq War, the build-up to the Iraq War. And a lot of people in Britain were against it. And there was 2 million people marched in London against the Iraq War. And that was a lot of people. Yeah, we were all against it. There was no reason for Britain to join with America to attack Iraq. None. You know, 9-11 happened to America. You know, Iraq had nothing to do with 9-11. You know, I think that was part of the reason for 9-11 was to destroy Iraq and get rid of Saddam Hussein.
Absolutely,
For Israel. And America couldn't do it alone. They could do it alone, but they needed support from others, so it doesn't look like America's attacking them. They needed, you know, France and Britain just to join in to play a side role. But the British people were against it. And they said, no suicide bombers, or we've had no terrorist incidents in Britain. Why should we attack Iraq? So that was used. Muslims attacking Britain was used to cajole the people into the war. Yeah?
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, and you saw, I mean, we've seen over the years since 9-11, there have been a number of false flag attacks across the Western world, in Britain, in Spain even, in France, have been designed to perpetuate this fraudulent global war on terror paradigm. And, I mean, you know, you can go back and look at the day of 9-11, Ehud Barak, a former Israeli prime minister, former defense minister. I believe he's still involved in Israeli politics. I believe, anyways. He may be retired, or I don't even – he might even be dead, actually. I knew he's pretty old, but he was very much involved in Israeli politics during 9-11. And, I mean, there's an interview with the BBC where he's literally saying, you know, sort of explaining the whole – global war on terror paradigm, and how the entire Western world needed to unite and kickstart and launch this war against all these countries in the Middle East. And it would be like a never-ending war, essentially, is what he was saying. He explained the paradigm like perfectly on the day of 9-11, and there's a number of examples of that happening, you know, the day of 9-11 and in the weeks and months afterwards. And, you know, it's pretty clear that this was a policy pursued by these hardline Zionist fanatics that had virtually, and still do to this day, virtually have, you know, total control over every aspect of the American government, over our media, over our politics. I mean, you know, you name it. And that was one of the biggest realizations that I came to after researching 9-11, was not only that the key suspects involved with actually carrying out the event, all these Israeli Mossad agents that were arrested by our own federal law enforcement agencies and local law enforcement, for that matter, in New Jersey and New York. Not only the people that were directly implicated, but the bigger players, the people that owned the towers, for example, the people that were in the Pentagon, the people that were in the media, the people that were responsible for investigating, and by investigate, I mean essentially formulate the official conspiracy theory that became cemented in the American public's mind following 9-11. All of these people were basically Jews, and all of them had direct ties to Israel. So it was sort of this broader realization that America was essentially a vassal state of international Jewry, and our government existed primarily, first and foremost, to advance these Jewish interests. And you have an interesting section on your website, Who Controls America?
Yes.
Exactly. You know, sort of documenting this. I actually just noticed you even have a good quote from me on here, which is pretty cool. Yeah, thank you for that.
Did you say that?
Yeah. I mean, I think I wrote this at one point. I don't know exactly what blog post this came from, but yeah, this is definitely something I wrote. You know what? Let me just read it here. You don't have the exact article or blog post linked, but this is definitely something that I wrote at some point. And I've written similar things like this over the years on numerous occasions. And I say here, the organized Jewish community through its various lobbies, nonprofit organizations, museums, charities, and other institutions essentially controls the Western political establishment. The United States Congress, White House, and Supreme Court are dominated by Jews and non-Jewish puppets of the Jews. It's truly shameful how subservient the American government, political establishment, and elite society is to Israel and the Jewish community. On a daily basis, American politicians literally commit treason against their own country right in the face of the American public. And I should add, many people are so brainwashed, they support this sort of behavior. That, you know, they think that, you know, Israel is our greatest ally and the Jews, you know, have never done anything wrong and they should be ruling over America, as Donald Trump said recently. And yeah. I'm not sure the details, but I'd imagine it's very similar in the United Kingdom, like this total Jewish control over virtually every lever of power. Is it the same in the United Kingdom?
Yes.
<It's>, I mean, any Western country you go to, it's incredible. And here in America is really a case study in this. I mean, you could just look at like the Biden White House, all the people in his cabinet.
Yeah.
You know, the people involved in the COVID scam. I mean, they're almost all of them are Jews. It's really crazy.
Some of the Biden's top, I think, 12 staff were Jews in all the top positions. You know, I mean, look at the head of the CDC is Walensky.
Right.
He's Jewish.
Well, and, you know, I remember when he was first, you know, forming his cabinet and naming all these people and getting them appointed. There were articles in the Jewish press talking about like how virtually every single one was a Jew, and they were like celebrating this fact and, you know, sort of boasting about it. And yet, if you were to point this out and be critical of it, you would be denounced as, you know, this racist, anti-Semite. You'd be called a conspiracy theorist, as if, like, you know, pointing this stuff out, noticing this sort of stuff is a conspiracy theory when it's, you know, blatantly obvious.
Yeah. It's called truth.
Yeah, well, that's what they do. They gaslight you, and they literally invert reality, invert the truth. It's, you know,
that's all they've got is name calling. They can't debate anything. They just call you a name. You know, like anti-vaxxer.
that's their new favorite one.
The vaccine. You know, they just have these words they throw at you because they can't debate you, so they just try to demonize you. I mean, going back to 9/11, I mean, Larry Silverstein, he was the head of, I think, the United Jewish Appeal Zionist Organization that raised money for the State of Israel.
Right. Not to mention he was a, you know, major billionaire Jewish real estate developer. He had, as you mentioned, ties directly to the organized Jewish community and, you know, was raising money for the organized Jewish community. He was a major Zionist. He had direct ties and connections to Benjamin Netanyahu and other political leaders in Israel.
Yeah. And, you know, surely that's a red flag when he bought the Twin Towers 6 weeks before 9/11. You know, surely to anyone.
Sure. And he took out that lucrative insurance policy as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And he got $3.5 billion or something in insurance. And he
just so happened to have a dentist appointment on the day of 9/11. I mean, the coincidences are like, once you look into this stuff and verify it for yourself, it is truly insulting what the media and government would have you believe.
Exactly. And he also sued the airlines for $12 billion, you know, because, you know, $4 billion is not enough. and he got 95 million, unfortunately, not the 12 billion. Because he said it was the airline's fault for allowing them to fly into my towers.
Yeah, talk about chutzpah. I mean, he's already getting, you know, billions of dollars in this insurance scheme.
Yeah.
And he still wants more money for an operation that he himself had to have been directly involved in. You know, maybe he didn't know all of the details exactly how it was going to go down, but he was clearly involved in setting it up. I mean, they privatized the World Trade Center complex.
Yeah.
What was it, like the year leading up to 9/11?
Yeah,
and he just so happened to step in. Yeah.
Yeah. Louis Eisenberg?
Yeah, I think it was. Eisenberg was the...
Yeah, Eisenberg, yeah. He was the chairman of the New York Port Authority.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, pretty much that whole process was a Jewish scheme, essentially.
Yeah.
To privatize the complex, yeah.
Yeah. So then they could buy it.
You know, again, for me, you know, realizing and making all these connections with 9/11 and really understanding who was behind it, who benefited, who was directly implicated, and realizing just the total Jewish control of you know, not only 9/11, but, you know, the bigger picture, American politics, the American media, Hollywood, you know, the banking system, Wall Street, academia, you know, pretty much most major aspects of society. This is something that once you see it, you know, you can't unsee it. You know, it's not something that you can just, at least for me, and I think for the vast majority of people that go down this path, once you realize these things and do, you know, do the research and come to your own conclusions, it's not something that you can just ignore or act like is, you know, oh, it's no big deal, you know, okay, whatever. There's not, you know, it's something that really sort of drives you and motivates you to stand up for the truth and to figure out what's really going on in the world and to try to do something about it.
Yeah. And I think that's why we create our own websites with this information on, because, you know, and I think one of the big things, John, and you know, and I know, is the media, the control of the media, because that's what people hear and watch and get brainwashed with.
Oh, absolutely.
They get the narrative from the media. But most of the people, you know, I'd say 80% maybe, get the story from the mainstream media, you know. And when it came to 9/11, I think it was half an hour after the Twin Towers fell, they knew Bin Laden had done it. It was Al-Qaeda.
Right, yeah, they implanted
Muslims straight away. Came from the Jewish-owned media, didn't it? CNN, ABC, in your case, in America, in the same in ours, you know, the BBC. They said Building 7 collapsed 20 minutes before it actually did. The BBC.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I think they were following a script, and they made a mistake.
Well, and you see that play out exactly with this COVID hoax as well.
Yes.
I mean, they are literally reading a script. And you know, let's actually sort of, you know, pivot and talk a little bit more about COVID. Because your website has a lot of great information on it. And, you know, let me just read a couple things here. On the main website, you say, everything the governments and media around the world are telling you about COVID-19 is a lie. And this can be backed up by scientific evidence. And I 100% agree with that statement.
Yeah,
and the truth about COVID, I think this, you really have a good way of sort of summarizing what this whole agenda is all about. And this is also coming directly from, it's the, like the first slide on your website. COVID-19 was a psychological manipulation to get the world's population to accept vaccine passports, which will morph into digital financial control by the central bankers.
Yes.
That is a perfect summation of what is going on. And what this agenda has been about from day one.
Exactly. That's obviously, people can't see that because the mainstream media, you know, brainwash them. We can go through. I think there's 7 big lies to do with COVID. I get it down to 7.
Okay. Yeah, go
I'll
ahead.
Just quickly go
tell
through
me.
Them.
I'm curious.
So the PCR test, right? Now, Cary Mullis won a Nobel Prize. He said you can't use that as a diagnostic test. It won't tell you if you're sick. I think it's used for DNA profiling. It's not to be used. It can't tell the difference between the flu or cold or anything, you know. And as far as I know, if you had a cold 6 months ago and you've got a small particle of that cold in your body, the PCR test will find it because it's amplified 40 times. And at that amplification, it can find anything, as Cary Mullis said, It'll find anything at that amplification. And it'll call yourself positive for finding a particle of DNA from your previous cold.
Yes, yeah. And let me just interject briefly and just say, because I just saw a clip the other day of the director of the CDC, the Jew, Rochelle Walensky, saying this same exact thing, saying that the PCR test will continue to give you a false positive weeks and even months afterwards. So the whole testing scheme is one of the biggest scams perpetuating this whole, you know, fake pandemic.
Yes, because, and also the CDC, I seen a news article, well, two actually, from two different sources, that the CDC withdrawn the PCR test from January this year.
Yep. Yeah, I saw that as
well.
It
cannot tell the difference between a cold, flu, and COVID. Well, hang on, they've been using the PCR test to bring up the cases and the deaths. Yeah? That's how they got all the deaths and cases from, the PCR test. Because if you went into a hospital, and this is how they inflated the deaths, if you go into a hospital with a bad heart, get rushed to hospital with a heart attack, you're in hospital, they'll take a PCR test, and if you're positive, yeah, but you might have no symptoms at all, and then you die of your heart attack, but because you had a positive test, you go down as a COVID death.
Right. So, like, the manipulation of the cause of death has been going on from day one, for sure.
Yeah. And then if you have cancer, but you had a positive test, you died of cancer, you go down as a COVID death as well, because you had a positive test. And that's, and they even said that, I think, from the White House.
Oh, yeah, back in 2020, I mean, when this was first started rolling out. Yeah, no, they were admitting it. You know, we consider COVID deaths anything, any death where a person either tests positive or is assumed to have COVID. I mean, no, literally, I remember, I mean, geez, back in, you know, like mid-2020, or yeah, I guess it would have been 2020. There were articles coming out, mainstream press, you know, government officials basically saying the same thing, that we assume somebody has COVID even if they're not tested, and if they die, we're recording it as a COVID death. And there have been all sorts of allegations made that a lot of these hospitals and doctors were financially incentivized to record COVID positive, you know, test cases and then also deaths. And even, getting people hooked up to these ventilators, which, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about this. I don't know if it's been totally conclusively proven, but I have no doubt stuff like that was going on over the course of the past 2 years.
Yeah, and they got paid for the COVID death, I think 13,000.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yep.
For each COVID death, and the ventilator death was more. So they had a reason. Hospitals had a good reason to want to label COVID deaths. You know, they got paid. So that's how we got the figures up. Any death, it was within 28 days as well, John. 28 days. So in the UK, there was articles where people had died in a car crash. But because they had a positive test 26 days before, they go down as a COVID death.
Yep. No, I know. There has been so much fraud. Yeah, yep.
So I think in America they talk 500,000 deaths, but I would say because the PCR test brings up 97% false positives, which means you could reduce that by 90%, the 500,000 deaths.
So I think it's even more than that. I think they're claiming it's 800,000. Deaths right now.
Is it 800 now?
Yeah, I think so. Something close. Let me see here. I'm just going to Google it.
Well,
over 800,000, yeah. 826,000, yeah.
Well, my guess is it'll be 100,000. The real figure of COVID actually killing people, you know?
I don't even... Honestly, I don't even know if COVID is even like a real thing. I mean, I've been following John Rappaport pretty closely. He's a very, very good journalist. Yeah, that's been covering a lot of medical issues for a long time. He's written a lot about AIDS, the AIDS scam.
That's
and,
right.
I mean, I don't know if they've ever really actually isolated COVID. I'm not even convinced at this point that viruses even cause disease, like the, yes. you know, like the mainstream paradigm of virology. I don't even go along with that anymore. I mean, I think there's so much fraud involved in the medical system that I don't trust really anything. And certainly that's pretty clear to me at this point with everything they've lied to us about with this COVID pandemic, which again is really not even a genuine pandemic. It's a global psyop, right?
It is.
Yep.
It's not a genuine pandemic at all. I mean, on my website, which I just got from another website, but there's 40 reasons why there was no pandemic, you know? And it goes through.
Yes.
It's a very good article. Mm-hmm. 40 reasons. And you're right. It hasn't been isolated, this virus, or purified. And a lot of people have requested from governments through the Freedom of Information Act, can you give us information about COVID? Has it been isolated? Can you give us evidence? There's one UK researcher called Andrew Johnson. He has a website. I can't remember what they're called at the moment. But he filed a Freedom of Information Act request to the British government, and they came back and said, we don't have any evidence of the isolation of COVID-19, you know? And there's quite many others who've also done the same. And as you say, yeah, there's no evidence. Because if you look at the symptoms of COVID-19 or what they say, it's the same as the common cold. You know, a cough.
Right. Yeah, I know. Exactly. At the very beginning.
Yeah.
Even going back to the very beginning, that's all it really ever was. It was, you know, the same symptoms associated with a common cold or flu-like symptoms, basically.
And I think that's the reason the authorities, the World Health Organization, gave these symptoms for COVID. Yeah, because it muddies the waters. You don't know the difference between a cold, a flu, or COVID.
Right.
If it said, for instance, COVID-19, you come out with purple spots, you know, that could easily be identified. Nobody's got it. But when they say, it's a cough, a temperature, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
that exactly. I mean, that's obviously a huge red flag. Even worse, though, is the fact that even according to their own statistics, which, I mean, I don't trust much of the statistics coming out from the government or media anymore, but even according to those statistics, 99.9% of people recover naturally from COVID. So why that leads to the next question. Why on earth are they promoting this vaccine so heavily? And from the very beginning, it's been about promoting the vaccine. Donald Trump played a key role in this with Operation Warp Speed. And virtually every single politician, health expert, doctor, the world over. That's how you know this is a globalist scheme.
Yes.
People were saying the same thing. They all had the same talking points handed down directly by people like Bill Gates, like the World Health Organization, like
Klaus Schwab.
Klaus Schwab. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they all had the same exact talking points, the same exact narrative, and it was all about the vaccine. Despite the fact that even according to their own statistics, it's nothing more than a flu or common cold, and 99.9% of people are recovering naturally.
Yeah, exactly. And the case fatality rate of COVID is 0.15%. 0.2% in some countries, but John Ioannidis from Stanford University, he came up with this statistic. He said the case fatality rate of COVID is 0.15%. Now, if you look at Ebola, the case fatality rate of that is 50%. And MERS is 37%. Meaning,
so if
you have 100... So, like, if 100 people caught Ebola, 50% of them would die. I think that's what that means.
So even by these previous quote unquote pandemics, which I am very skeptical of myself, even, you know, according to their official narrative, this pandemic is was nothing on the scale of these previous ones. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah. So it's 0.15%, the case fatality rate. According to John Ioannidis, well, he's one of the top epidemiologists in the world. And that is a fact. So that's the same case fatality rate, by the way, as the flu.
Right. Yeah.
It's not more deadly than the flu.
And that's a point that a lot of people have been making, that, you know, basically COVID is just a rebranding of the flu.
Yeah, yeah. And supposedly 60,000 people die of the flu in America each year. Yeah, supposedly. And that's about the same as what's died of COVID this year. Over the past... And of course, the figures they give out of the deaths, that's over 2 years now. You say 800,000, but that's over two years, isn't it?
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. Going back to when it was first declared like a public, you know, a public pandemic, you know, officially declared a pandemic, I guess. And when that would have been, what, January 2020, I think, like the end of January, early February 2020?
Yeah, February 2020. I mean, when it first started, I couldn't believe it. You know, everything was closed. No one's allowed in any sports stadiums. All businesses closed. And I thought, what kind of disease is this? And quickly I started researching. You know, and it took me about a month to figure out. As soon as I heard Bill Gates on a video in April 2020 say, we can't get out of this until the world has been vaccinated.
The whole world has been vaccinated, yes, he said. I remember that interview specifically, yes.
Until the whole world. And then he said, we need to open up society. We need some type of health pass where some people can, you know, travel and that. They need to pass this test first to see if they can travel. The health pass, he mentioned that. How did he know that back then?
Well, right. I mean, they've been these globalist elites have been talking about this stuff for a very, very long time, and you know they needed a crisis in order to really implement this agenda, and that's conveniently what COVID-19. I think COVID served a number of agendas, not only this, you know, global like health vaccine passport scheme, but also I think it was instrumental in stealing the election from Trump. And you know, I'm not a huge Trump fan or Trump supporter, but I think that was, I think COVID, the manufactured COVID crisis played a key role in the chaos. And really, I mean, looking back at 2020, it was just 1 year of like a total Bolshevik style revolution in this country. Yeah. You know, I mean, you look at the criminality, the violence, the looting, the rioting.
Yeah.
You know, coupled with the lockdowns and, you know, people losing their jobs and small businesses going under and people being oppressed by these tyrannical policies. It's crazy. And I mean, it's still going on to a certain extent, but that year itself was really a very revolutionary year in history, I think. Yeah. And I think, you know, part of it was designed to facilitate the total theft of the 2020 election.
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely it was stolen from Trump, you know, because I was watching it in the UK and Trump was winning in some states. You know, he was up. But, you know, then I went to bed because, you know, it was too late. And then when I got up, he'd lost quite heavily. I thought, how was that? He was winning in some of the states.
Well, that's the story for pretty much anybody, even people here in America. You know, everybody was, you know, he was winning when he went to bed, and then he woke up, and all of a sudden, Joe Biden is being. Well, actually, it wasn't even announced. It wasn't even declared officially for a couple weeks after the election. But it was crazy. I mean, the media. I think it was like I'm trying to remember. I think it would have been in like early December of 2020. The media finally came out and said that Biden actually won the election before it was even like officially announced by, you know, like federal officials. And the whole thing was such a scam. I mean, this I think that's pretty clear, regardless of what you really think about Trump.
I wasn't a great fan of him. I mean, a lot of white America was, because he was against immigration, or so he said. He was going to build the wall, which didn't happen across the border with Mexico. He always said that he would, and it didn't happen at all. I'm not sure why these deep state preferred Biden over Trump. I can only think what does come to mind is Trump didn't support the World Health Organization, and he said he'd pull funding from it, and he was also against climate change. Trump, is that correct?
Yes, I think generally speaking, I think you're basically right. I want to say he did threaten to pull funding from the World Health Organization. I don't know if that actually happened. He was skeptical of global warming. He was sort of a wild card. I mean, really, he turned out to be like essentially totally controlled and manipulated by, you know, Zionists essentially and Jews. But at the end of the day, I think like the bigger players needed him out of the way to really implement this broader globalist system, which they're pushing for. And it's sad too, because I think history is going to show that Trump actually played a key role in this by not standing up and speaking the truth about this hoax from the beginning. You know, he went along with so many key aspects of COVID, especially the vaccine agenda.
He did the warp speed thing. You know, I mean, there's so many lies to do with COVID, but one of the big ones is all governments of the world. They say they want to keep us safe. And they're doing this to save people's lives. That's what they're doing all these restrictions for, the masks, to keep us safe. But that is just a bald-faced lie, and I'll tell you why. Because the vaccine injuries, if they were want to keep us safe, then they'd look at the vaccine injuries in America on VAERS, in the UK on the MHRA, because VAERS, the adverse reporting system in America, during the H1N1 in the 1970s, it picked up, I think, 50 deaths, and the vaccines were stopped after 50 deaths. And then in the swine flu in 2003, it was stopped. I mean, I got this information off Dr. Peter McCullough when I watched one of his interviews. Yeah? And he said the swine flu vaccines were stopped after about 25 deaths. 25 deaths on VAERS. Yeah? So they could investigate. But now, on VAERS, there's 21,000 deaths in America. And they're not stopping it. They're not even investigating it. And if they cared about the people like they say, they would. But they don't care about the deaths. The media don't even bring it up. They hide it. The government hides it. They say it's not happening. No one's dying of the vaccines. And that is just an outright lie. At the very least, you'd investigate. Because that's what VAERS is. It's an early warning system.
Yep.
To pick up any vaccine deaths or injuries. And it's run by the CDC and the FDA. Now, if they care about the people, they'd stop the vaccine rollout and then investigate these deaths. But they're not. And it's not just America. You can't just say, well, that's America. It's happening in every country. In our country, the UK, there's 1,800 deaths on the government's MHRA, which is the Medical Regulatory Agency. So they run the vaccine adverse reporting system. And there's 1,800 deaths on there and 1.2 million adverse reactions. And out of them, I think there's 450 people on that system have been blinded by the vaccine. And they'll all be youngish people, not the old people. You know, so if they cared about the people, like they say, because that's what they're doing all this for, they care about us, they want to keep us safe. So that's one big lie, straight away. It's not about caring for the people. They're pushing vaccines constantly. Whether you're injured, you're dying, the vaccines don't even work. They don't stop COVID. You're spreading COVID. They don't stop you getting COVID or being ill from COVID. They do nothing. And that's why you've got two vaccines, a booster and another booster. I mean, if you look in Austria, the government is forcing the vaccine on the Austrians. From April this year, every person in Austria has to be vaccinated. Or you get a 5,000 euro fine. And if you don't pay it, you go to jail. Now,
it's really out of control. What I want to know is where are the decent lawyers stepping up to challenge this in court? I mean, none of this is legal, at least in my view. I mean, I'm certainly no lawyer, but I just don't see how any of these totally ridiculous, vaccine quote unquote laws or mandates, how is any of this even legal? You know, it certainly violates the U.S. Constitution, in my understanding.
Yeah, it must do. People have bodily autonomy. They should decide what goes into their body.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can't. See, and they say they're not going to force you. They're not going to come to your house and pin you down and put a gun to your head and stick the vaccine in your arm. They can't do that. So they do it other ways, using the vaccine passport system, denying you access to your life, telling you can't travel, you can't go and watch that soccer match. You can't go to a pop concert unless you've been vaccinated. And that's getting a lot of young'uns just vaccinated. I've got family members, my nieces and nephews, and some of them have got vaccinated. And I'm saying, why? Is it, because we want to go to the nightclub? Because we want to travel? My own brother, he knows that this is about the New World Order. That's what he says. Oh, it's to do with the New World Order. Yet he still got vaccinated. I said, why? He said, because I want to travel.
Yeah.
And that's...
Well, they've broken people. I mean, that's what this boils down to is... And, I don't think these people want to force people to take the vaccine. They want to get people to just coerce them into doing it themselves. Yes. I think that's a huge part of this is sort of like the devil is always... try to get you to willingly go along with his agenda, right?
Yeah, and I think it's a stepping stone. I think they're using the vaccine passports as a stepping stone to brainwash the public into accepting a vaccine passport just to access your normal life. Like, you want to go to a restaurant? Show us the QR code on your phone. Shows you've been vaccinated, yeah? So to access your normal life, watch a sporting event, travel, anything like that, you need to prove you've been vaccinated. So someone has to give you access. Someone has to say, okay, you can do that, you can do that. And I think the brainwashing the public to this digital ID system, they're getting us used to this vaccine passport system as a normal way of living.
Yep, exactly. Yep, I completely agree, and that was sort of one of the first things that I read on your website when I came across it is that's what this agenda is all about. And again, people like Bill Gates and some of these other globalists have openly admitted as much. And again, they're using the sort of COVID vaccine passport as a means to ultimately implementing like this, what do they call it, ID 2030 or ID 2020, where like everything is tied in to this like digital ID, digital currency. It's going to be tied into your social credit score and what you've said on social media and stuff like that.
I mean,
there's all sorts of quotes and clips from these people openly saying this, that's ultimately what the agenda is.
Yeah, that's the agenda. I mean, you only have to spend a day or two researching this and you can easily find this out. I mean, Bill Gates is the big driver of this. I mean, he's invested in so many vaccination programs, like Gavi, for instance, which is like mandating vaccines. The Rockefellers are also connected to that, and the British government, the World Health Organization. So Bill Gates has a lot of investment in this vaccine agenda, but I don't think he's the top. I don't think he's the top guy. He's just the errand boy, as far as I'm concerned. Bill Gates. There's someone higher than him in the shadows. You know, a group, a cabal, whatever you want to call it, and Bill Gates is doing this work for them.
Right. Yeah? Yep.
And I think it's the central bankers, yeah, the one who own the Federal Reserve, the Bank for International Settlements, the IMF, the World Bank. They're running this. They have all the money in the world, and they're running this. This is their plan. And Bill Gates is working for them, as is all these crooked governments, you know, like Trudeau in Canada. I think he's shocking. I don't know if you've had a look what he's doing in Canada. The same in New Zealand, Australia. Australia's been shocking. I mean, I think COVID deaths in Australia, there's been under 1,000 deaths in 2 years. But Australia, they've got concentration camps in Australia for people who were, they call it quarantine camps. But I've seen videos of people in there. One woman got put in there because she came close to someone who'd had a positive test. So they came to her house and took her to the camp.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know? It's incredible. Oh, some of the things that we're seeing all over the world. Well, and it shows you, and Terry, we're actually going to have to wrap up here. I'm going to have to run here in just a minute. But I totally agree with you. And, yeah. And if anything, this COVID scam has really demonstrated that this global government system is fully in place. I mean, you look at the coordinated worldwide response to this,
yes.
And everybody's on the same page.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't even think of like a single politician that's even saying anything remotely accurate about the dangers of vaccines or, you know, this globalist agenda in general, you know, the push for vaccine passports and this global, you know, digital ID and all these other things. Nobody's really connecting all these dots. I mean, some of them may be critical of, you know, the mandates or the lockdowns, but
yeah.
Nobody is, at least as far as I know, is really connecting all the dots and bringing the full picture to people and standing up to, you know, to the full agenda.
So what state do you live in, John?
I'm actually in New York now.
Oh, I thought you lived in California.
I was in California for years. We recently moved though, and it's right. Like going from one of the worst states to probably the worst state.
So what's it like? I've heard New York is bad, that you can't do anything unless you've been vaccinated. Is that right?
You know, it's funny. I really don't know. I mean, I don't live like in the city. I don't really go into the city. So where I'm at, no, not really. I mean, I don't even get hassled about a face mask ever. I haven't you know, even been asked to put on a face mask for, oh my gosh, it's probably been 7 or 8 months now, maybe even longer. So I wouldn't say it's like totally back to normal. I mean, there's all sorts of people wearing masks and people getting the vaccine and just the overall, you know, mass hysteria surrounding this whole fake pandemic. But it's not nearly as bad as what you see in the city, I don't think. I mean, in the city, I think a lot of places are actually like making you show a vaccine passport to get in.
Yeah.
I haven't, you know, been involved in that. I don't want anything to do with that. So I'm going to steer clear of the city, but
yeah,
it's,
I mean,
it's pretty bad everywhere, man.
Masks don't even work, do they? I mean, there's 40 peer-reviewed scientific studies showing that masks don't work.
Yeah, you know? Well, it's about control. It's about dehumanizing people. It is about perpetuating this idea that there is this deadly pandemic going on.
Yeah, and a mask reminds people of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So your mask on the face.
It's slavery. It's total degrading human, you know, human degrading to human dignity in general. I mean, you can't even communicate with somebody wearing a face mask.
No, you can't see them smile. You can't talk. They try to talk, you can't hear them. You know, I think so. Everything about this, the lockdowns, you know, the inflated deaths, the media propaganda, the lies. It's just, I mean, the one thing in the UK government, they had sage advisors. Are you still there, John?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry. The UK government had advisors called SAGE, and they had quite a few behavioural psychologists. Now, why would you need behavioural psychologists in a pandemic?
Right. Wasn't there like a big scam? And I remember some British journalist came out and wrote a whole book about it, how they were literally like using fear-based mind control tactics.
Yeah.
To manipulate the public. And, we see the same thing in America. I mean, that's on display any single time you turn on the television. It's all fear-based mind control programming.
Yeah, like in the early days when they showed us China, people were dropping in the streets.
Yep, totally fake.
But ever since then, in every country, nobody's dropped in the streets. But they use that as fear.
Fear-based. Right, exactly.
That was part of the beginning of the fear-based, you know, mind control. And on the media, I remember they used a picture of a boy. Again, it's on my website on the under the COVID media propaganda. There's a picture of a boy who said it was the first UK boy to die of COVID, 14-year-old. But that boy died 7 years ago from suicide.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I know. I believe it. I'm looking at it right now, yeah.
And he said he was the first one to die of COVID. So they used that to say, look, anyone can die. Kids can die of this. You know, and they think nobody's going to look that up to see if this boy really did die. You know, that's how stupid they think we are. You know?
Yeah.
And I remember early on they used the hospital.
Shameful.
In New York. And said, look at this busy hospital in New York. I think it was ABC or CBS. It was one of their news channels. Look at this busy hospital in New York overran. It was actually a hospital from Italy.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I know. I know. It's incredible the amount of media manipulation, media fakery, media deception involved in all of this. And it's all designed to perpetuate this fear-based mind control program. That's exactly what COVID is.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, I'll tell you what, man. I'm going to have to run here. But I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. It was a great conversation, and we'll definitely stay in touch.
I know.
And maybe do this again in the future. I hope.
You could have talked a lot more, but there's maybe another day.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. We'll stay in touch. Keep up the good work. I really like the website and look forward to future updates. And yeah, man, we'll do this again in the future.
Oh, that'd be great. I always look at your website and that, and I listen to your podcasts. There's some great stuff on there. Thanks, man. Taking the time to.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. You take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.